everybody. We got a special edition of the Game Gravy podcast. We have a guest today from RC Madex, Mike. I don't know how to say your last name, so I'm not going to say it.
He can introduce him. He can introduce himself, right?
Yeah, there you go. But we also have Mike and Anthony from Game Gravy here.
Hello.
So, Mike, why don't you go ahead and give us a little background about yourself?
Sure. Yeah. So like you said, my name is Mike. Last name is Ashenbrenner. So I know it's kind of confusing. I grew up trying to spell that. It was a nightmare. So, but I was born and raised here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I started developing games only about a year ago, and I started with Nintendo. So I am completely new to the industry, completely new to game making. You know, this is all very a learning experience for me. I had zero knowledge of game design or anything before that. So yeah, it's going to be very interesting to continue on in this.
Yeah. The reason we have you on this evening is you have two games coming out this week. One you developed, one you published. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's okay. Correct. Yeah.
So let's start off with the one you developed, and that one's Toss and Go.
Yep.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Toss and Go is just a very simple pick-up-and-play dice game where you can either play against the computer or you can play against a second player by tossing the gamepad back and forth between the two of you while you take turns. So basically, you just roll the dice. You have 10 dice on the screen. The dice have three different faces. It's either a green cross, a yellow circle, or a red X. Now, your goal is to go ahead and get to the score of 100 by rolling the dice and collecting as many green crosses as possible. Now, if you roll a yellow circle, that's kind of like a push, like a wash. You can go ahead and roll that again. But if you get a red X, it doesn't count for anything. You go back and forth with yourself and the computer. You can bank points as you go, because if you, let's say you get the 99 points in a single roll, but you don't bank any points and you get a red X, well, you're going to lose all your points. And I've actually gone several. Yeah.
I was like, Dane needs a new pair of shoes. Come on, he can do it.
Right? Yeah, I've actually gotten several messages already, and they're like, oh, you know, the CPU, you know, you give them one turn and they win the game. So it's kind of random. So, I guess we'll kind of like just check out Miiverse and see how things go with that. And if it's that big of an issue, can always patch it up and fix things. So, but yeah, it's pretty fun. I mean, it's a good time waster. I mean, it's one of those games in the tabletop series that just like Poker Dice and Shut the Box, where you just kind of play when you have a couple minutes to play, or if you're just watching TV, you can just kind of chill there and play.
That's
it.
Exactly what I was doing last night while I was watching a movie. I was playing it, wanted to get familiar with it, and I was like, I'll play for a little bit more. I'm like, I'll keep playing for a little bit more. I was like, I can beat the computer. I beat the computer a couple of times. The computer beat me. I'm like, one more. Come on. So yeah, definitely a fun game.
Me and the computer have different opposing views on how to play. Me, I'm like,
yes, me too.
I'm the penny slot guy. The computer's the guy that's going to throw his whole house out there on the market. And when he loses, he's going to be the drunk on your couch.
And that's something too. Like, I'm a huge gambler. Like, I love going to the casino. So, you know, whenever, you know, consoles don't really have, like, I remember back in the day, the PS1, the N64, Super Nintendo, NES used to have a ton of like different casino games and blackjack this and slots and everything like that. But, you know, modern consoles, they just don't have it anymore. So it's all about the smartphones and the tablets have those types of games now, but you don't really see that too often on a console.
Yeah, one of the games that I remember on the Super NES was the Vegas Stakes. I used to love that game.
Yep. Yeah, I actually have that. I think that's on Virtual Console.
Yeah, I picked it up with the club downloadable games. I got that last month for like 20 points. It was pretty cool. So what engine is Toss and Go built on?
Toss and Go, as well as all of my current games, are built using the framework. It's also built with Block 2 as well, which is basically a non-programming way of creating games with no programming required. So it's all visual scripting. So if you want to say, for instance, if I want to on the title screen hit the A button to continue, then I would just visually tell the engine when player hits A button, you know, go to this page and so on. So it's a quick and easy way to actually create these very simple games. It could also be used for some complex games as well, but I will say that I've struggled a little bit with some of the larger games, like for instance Super Robo Mouse. It got up there in scale to where it did struggle a little bit to kind of keep up with it. So in the future I'm going to be switching over to using Unity for larger projects.
Is Super Robo Mouse still going to come out though?
Yeah. I mean, I did have to cut a little bit out of it, and it's been taking a lot longer than I expected to finish just because, like, I don't know, I'm always getting ideas for new games, and then I lose, like, focus on finishing the ones that I'm...
Hello? Ant?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, Mike, you're cutting out. Oh no! Hope we didn't lose him.
Did we lose him?
Oh, are you there? You cut out a bit.
Who I cut out?
Yeah, you did.
Okay. What's the last thing you heard me say?
You were talking about Super Robo Mouse, and you went on to different ideas and had to come back to it.
Okay. Yeah, I always get nervous when I hear silence. I'm like, oh, did I accidentally, like, hang up on the call or something?
No, we just heard the internet glitch out a bit, and it just went quiet.
okay. So, I mean, it's been in development for about a year now, and, you know, the issue with that was, because it is a larger project, I have the attention span of a 2-year-old. So I lose,
I can relate.
I just kind of like lose focus on working on the same thing for a very long period of time. So that's why I've kind of like moved back and forth with other projects. And then some games, you know, I literally just sat down in a couple of days, I kind of made it, and we'll leave that game as a mystery. We all probably know what game that is, but yeah, I just kind of like lost focus, but it's definitely still coming out first quarter next year. I plan on finishing it up and getting out there.
Very good. Is the Super Robo Mouse Amiibo coming out that same day?
That'd
be awesome.
Us as indies, we've actually had this discussion with Nintendo, and so a lot of people have to realize, so Amiibo is just a form of NFC, and Amiibo is Nintendo's brand of NFC. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we are free to, I mean, Nintendo gives us to access to how do I word this? To all the features of the Wii U. But with Amiibo being their brand, if we do create anything like interactive figures or maybe just like a token that's NFC or whatever like that, we would never be able to call it Amiibo.
Of course.
But it's certainly a feature that, you know, that we can take advantage of. And a lot of developers are looking into that. But there's, I mean, anytime you manufacture a physical item, there's huge costs with that. So,
Well, I was going to say, like, have you guys tried like prototyping anything? I have a lot of 3D printers and access a lot of stuff in my production shop. If you ever want us to crank one out, just send me a 3D file. I can do it.
that would actually be awesome. Cause I was actually pricing out 3D printers. Cause I actually had this.
They're expensive. Like corporate pays for it. So it's like, okay, they're like the top of the line prototype ones. So I could just like, you know, plug my laptop in, dump the 3D file, print it, and then
send you one, then
print an extra one for me. But yeah, I'll send you one.
Yeah. I mean, I was looking at it, like, even like the cheapest ones are a couple thousand, and they're not like, I was looking at the quality and it's not really there yet.
No, the ones that are good quality are at least 15 grand, I think.
Yeah.
once I've seen it, at least.
And I think I read an article about Toys for Bob or whatever it's called, the creators of Skylanders. They were talking, they were talking about how they, I guess they were, you know, they do the same thing. They kind of use 3D printers, but the ones they got to use are just so expensive in order to get the quality there, you know, for prototypes. So, you know, I got some, you know, ideas written down for things that would be interesting to do, but that would just require a lot of time and money, and I'm kind of content with my under $5 games, at least for the near future. So
do you foresee your Unity games being priced a little higher?
I've just started kind of like looking into Unity development. Like, I got a couple books, and I can tell already that the effort that I'd have to put into them is just so much more.
The level of effort is a lot higher in Unity. My development experience, at least. I'm just like,
What genre are you looking at to put these games in? Just curious.
Well, I am going to, my first Unity release is going to be a block drop game.
Okay.
Only because, I mean, it's a very simple idea. It's simple shapes, so it's nothing complex, nothing that really needs animated. You know what I mean? So, you know, Block Drop U is my first dip into game development, so it kind of only makes sense to use the franchise to also prototype with Unity.
Yeah, take it to the next level. Yeah.
Absolutely. And the great thing about Unity, too, is the fact that I will be able to publish to other platforms other than Wii U. So you got your PlayStation consoles and your Xbox as well. So that's the great thing about using Unity versus HTML5, which is kind of just limited as far as consoles go to Wii U at the moment.
Mm-hmm. You could even do fun Oculus stuff.
Right?
Later down the road.
Project Morpheus.
So. Yeah.
So let's go back to Toss and Go. What unique Wii U functionality does it have in there? I know we talked about the touchscreen and the off-screen play. Does it have anything else in there?
For that particular title, yeah, just the touchscreen and the off-screen play. Off-screen play, which is honestly pretty much a standard now. Like, if you make a game for Wii U, you kind of have to have off-TV play. You know, even Nintendo themselves, I don't think there's really...
Donkey Kong, and that made me very upset. Well, it had it, it has it, but it's like black screen if you don't have it on there, so it's just weird.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I was just playing a World of Keflinks. I'm doing a review for that, and it makes use of the second screen to put like to do your buildings and stuff because it's a simulation game. But you kind of forego having the off screen play, which I've come so accustomed to doing on games, and it's just like I love off screen play. And it's just like when it doesn't have it, you're like, oh man,
yeah.
It's like almost like it's like that's the feature I want with the touchpad from now on. It's like I don't even really care if they try to use it in a unique way. I just want to make sure that the off screen play is there.
Yeah, and I've noticed like even with Nintendo recently, I don't think there's. I mean, Captain Toad uses the gamepad in pretty specific ways, too. But you can always – I mean, there's never anything where you have to use the TV, which I think is kind of key with Wii U. I mean, that off-TV play is the number one feature. I can't tell you, you know, the last time I've actually had the TV on when I played the Wii U or actually had it tuned to showing what was on the Wii U versus having just, like, YouTube playing or something else. Yeah, with a different console. So
the only thing for me is Smash Brothers. That's the only thing I even put on my TV. But I mean that's kind of like a necessity when you have people over. But that's about it. Though I agree with you though with the off screen play.
Yeah. So So touchscreen and off TV player kind of like the only two Wii U features. Some things like I mean, as of right now, I don't really have the experience in adding like Miiverse and things like that to the games. It's something I'm looking into for next year for some of the titles. But for the games released this year, so it's mainly touchscreen and off screen play.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of indie developers started putting. I know which I forget the name of the company, but the ones that made Tengami, I think. They have the what do you call them, stamps in the game now that you can put on there, and there was a few other ones that
Nam.
Yeah, thank you. And there's a few other ones I've been dabbling in that, but that, yeah, I think it's a cool feature on there, so it's nice to see other people besides Nintendo using it.
Yeah, my only I love stamps, by the way. I think that's a really cool feature. It's kind of like achievements, but my only complaint with that is I kind of wish there was a like a system wide type of like tally system for that. Like maybe you can go into an app and it'll show you your games and what stamps you have collected, and you can share that information with your friends, and it would just be like a cool way of discovering other games. Like you can check out other friends' stamps lists and stuff like that, kind of like trophies and achievements.
Yeah, kind of comparing trophies. Yeah, right. I think that'd be cool.
It's funny. I was making mention of basically that similar thing on our earlier podcast.
Yeah.
So that's kind of funny that you mentioned that. So we're on the same page on that one.
Everybody wants it. So yeah, it's just a good idea.
Exactly. Well, I said it should be account wide. Like that's how it should be. Like the stamp should be tied to your account. Not
so you can see all your games and see everything that you're doing. It'd be really cool.
Yeah, so I noticed like all your games have been under the $5 price point. I think even under the $2 price point, right?
Yeah, up till right now they're all under $2. So Super Robo Mouse will be the first one that dabbles in the over $2, but still under $5 price range. It'll be $3.99 is what I'm kind of aiming for. Game.
How do you feel that that's working out? Going with the lower price titles.
I think it's working out great. I mean, you know, it's getting, you know, it's that price point where people people shouldn't feel that it's a ripoff or anything like that if they dislike the game. Since I am new and, you know, my brand's new still, I wanted to be able to get in there at a price point where people would try them out and kind of
Impulse buy. Yeah, price.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think deluxe digital promotion helps. So we will kind of have to see how things continue into next year when they end that.
I was really hoping they would just continue it through the life of the system.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, 10% isn't a lot. And it definitely made a lot of people download their games versus getting them at retail. But yeah, I'm kind of confused. I mean, they're not losing out much money, so I don't see why they. Yeah.
I don't think you can see who's buying your games. But do you find yourself getting loyal followers to your games? I mean, I guess the only way to really gauge that would be Miiverse and Twitter. But
yeah, I mean, there's definitely, especially with once the folders update came to Wii U, it was pretty funny because everyone was tweeting me pictures of their RC Mattiax folders that they made because there were so many damn games. Right. So they all created like their own RC Mattiax folders to put like all the games because they knew there was a ton more coming. So they were like, oh, I'm also just make your own folder on my Wii U, which is awesome. So, but yeah, there's definitely, you know, on Twitter, I get the same kind of people reply to stuff and you know, on my Twitter, I don't just talk about my games. I mean, 90% of the time I just talk about random Nintendo shit. So, so I always get like, you know, conversations going with people, and I think that's kind of helped things too. So
yeah, it just puts a face behind the developer. Definitely. So
yeah, for sure.
Do you think if you release your games at a higher price point, you'd make more money, or you think you're making it more in volume?
I'm kind of concentrating just on volume, just to kind of, like I said, you know, this is all new to me. I'm just, you know, this is still like, for me, this is still like the testing phase, even though I have, 6 games out now, but, yeah, it's just a learning experience. I'm trying to get as many people on the games as possible so I can gather as much feedback as possible so that hopefully one day, you know, I'll be able to create AAA content for, you know, that can sell for $10 or $15 or $20.
You actually know what your followers like and want to see.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't want to. So I don't want to like price it. I don't want to price it too high. I mean, I'm sure some of the games I probably could sell for like $3 or $4 or $5. But I don't know. I would feel like I was. I don't know. I like to price them accordingly. Like I look at it from the standpoint of like if I'm a consumer, how much would I pay for this and feel comfortable with it, and that's how I price them. So,
I don't want to say like I'm like you know doing a disservice to your earlier games, but looking at Super Robo Mouse, I could definitely tell that there's you know a higher quality to that game than your other ones.
Still there? Are you guys still there? Ant? Mike?
Hello?
Okay, I can hear you. What?
Sorry.
That dropped off. I was like, oh, great. He just signed off. Thanks.
Yeah, it's the weirdest thing. I'm on my iPhone, and I heard you drop in the middle of the call, and I'm looking at my phone, and some 1-800 number was calling me, and my cheek must have hit the accept button. So.
Oh, okay.
I'm actually gonna try to put you on speaker right now. Can you hear me? Still?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'll just put you on speaker.
Okay. So what I was, I'll go back to the question I was asking before whatever happened. So I was saying not I don't want to do a disservice to your other game. I love your other games, but it just looking at Super Robo Mouse, it just looks like a game to me that it just shows like your progression and you maturing as a game developer. It looks like your biggest project, and I mean you could see that at the price point, but it looks like that's the kind of game that like has that justifiable price point that you're talking about.
It definitely is, and that's why it's taken so long to get it out there. So you know I used like a lot of people, I don't know, some people think that I am just kind of cashing in on my games and that's the end of it, but like every penny that I make, I just reinvest in the business. So I actually hired a professional artist for all of the art in Super Robo Mouse. So it's all hand-drawn art, which I think definitely adds to the value of it, which is why it has a slightly higher price. Mm-hmm. But so you'll start to see Super Robo Mouse might be the only example of that. Like I think Super Robo Mouse will be my highest price content in 2015. Mm-hmm. But starting in 2016, when I move into developing with Unity, you'll start to see things that the production values are just so much higher.
Yeah.
Cool.
But yeah, what you were saying too, where people feel like you're just like walking away from your games after you release them, I'd have to say like I completely disagree when it comes to Block Drop U. And I'll go out and say when I first played the game and I reviewed it, I thought it was okay, but then I had some complaints about it. But you went in and you fixed everything that basically everyone was complaining about, and it actually came out to be an awesome game. And it's on. I look at it as a cult classic, really, of indie games.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah, it's in the fact that you're doing so many crossovers with it, and it's in so many games now. Like I just feel like it's kind of like that game that you look at and you're just like, okay, well, it came out. It was like kind of one of the first Nintendo frameworks, or it was the first one. It, you know, it had its issues. You went through, you fixed everything, made it a really good game, a really great game. And I just feel like it has that cult following now that you see like in, you know, in the movies where you have like your B movies, it's kind of like that, but with the indie games.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah. And I think a lot of that came down to the fact that it was the first web framework game. So, so thankfully I got a ton of press for that. So there were, you know, there were just articles everywhere. And I remember back in March, I was just doing a ton of interviews about it and about the web framework. And 'cause everyone was so curious about what it was and, and what kind of games were going to come out of it. And the first Block Drop U was quite the journey to get out, because it was my first game ever, and I've never like the whole process of publishing a console game is so much different than one would expect. I mean, people think they, you know, you just click a button and it's up there, but
no,
Nintendo does a ton of internal testing and
a lot of QA.
Yeah. and even for Nintendo, so like even for them it was a learning experience, cuz even though Nintendo Japan had published a web framework game a couple months earlier than that, this was the first for Nintendo of America. So there were a lot of questions surrounding how they approach that and how they can ensure that the title's going to run smoothly without crashing or without messing up the system software. So there were a lot of like back and forth with NOA and Nintendo of Japan trying to get everything to work correctly. And the game was completed in December of 2013, and it took, you know, 3 months and a couple tries and lot check in order to get it published. So it was quite the journey. But then I took all the feedback from the reviews, and I got an artist to kind of redo some of the art, and I kept the music. I kind of like the music, even though most people hate the music. But
I actually like the music.
Yeah,
I'm not a big techno guy, so
I like electronic music and techno, so I like it. So
yeah, so I did that, and then one of the things that I added was the So the save feature, the save your progress, which when I was playing the game, you know, it's not a very long game. It's a fairly short game, but it's a game you can play over and over again. I didn't see what the big deal was about not having a save feature, but apparently everyone else disagreed with me. So that was one of the things where, like, me personally, I didn't care too much for it, but you know, there was so much feedback coming in about it that I had to change it. Mm-hmm. So that's when I added the save feature to it as well. So
I'd be one of those people that were complaining about the save feature. I'll admit it.
Well, it's like so many things happen, and sometimes you have to walk away for a second or do something, and you're like, dang it.
Well, it's the biggest thing is having a kid when you have to go, because that kid just, you know, you cannot play games any longer. It's nice to be able to just save it and then put it down and then come back to where you were at. So.
But it's awesome that you took that feedback and did stuff with it, because not a lot of people do that, and that shows that you care and you're giving back to the community. So,
yeah, and I mean another complaint about it was the length of it, and so there's 20 more stages coming next year.
Oh, awesome!
I can't wait for that.
Hopefully I'll be like it's one of those things where I'm working on those. I'm working on Super Robo Mouse. I'm trying to get Block Drop Twisted Fusion ready for Europe. You know, there's like so many things I'm trying to do at the same time, and sometimes it's just very hard to focus on one thing. But the new stages are called the Chaos Levels, and one of the most requested things was to combine the regular stages with the blades with the bounce blocks all in one. They kind of just have this frenzied mess going on. So those are what the 20 stages are gonna be around.
So each level that you release, though, you're testing to make sure you could beat it first.
It's so weird. Like Block Drop Twisted Fusion, I was struggling with a lot of the levels only because I did not make them myself. So
That makes sense.
But now like ever since the first Block Drop U, there's, you know, anytime I have a new game or something, I kind of send it to some developer friends, and they always play test it and give me their feedback before I release it. So I think I'll probably do the same with those before I send them out there.
Yeah, because I was playing the Block Drop Twister Fusion, and I'm like, Lewis didn't beat these levels. I don't care what he says.
It's actually really funny. I had to, I had sent him an email. I'm like, dude, you have to give me like a player's guide or something, because I was trying to thoroughly test the levels before I sent it to Nintendo, and I'm like, I can't beat the levels. So I don't know if it's just unbeatable, and we need to fix that, or if I'm just not looking at this right. And I was just getting so frustrated because it was, you know, I was preparing to show the game off at Ohio Game Developers Conference that they were having in Columbus, and I'm trying to get like the demo working and everything. And at the same time, I knew that I needed to get the project submitted before I went to the game conference to Nintendo in order to get it out before Christmas. So like there were nights where I was up to like 2 a.m. and I know he's in the UK, so I can only imagine what time that is for him. So
that's in the morning by that time. That's like 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 9. That's like 10 in the morning by that time.
Yeah. So I don't know if he like woke up early or just didn't go to bed. So I'm not really sure.
Probably.
He definitely created something very difficult, and it's very awesome. So whenever I create these chaos levels and whenever I create the next block drop, he definitely set a bar that I'm going to have to at least meet, if not, you know, exceed as far as difficulty goes.
Yeah. How much input did you have in the development process, or did he do everything?
Well, I let him have full like creative control, pretty much. There were a few things along the way that, I don't remember specifically what they were, but so what I did was I gave him the project files for the original Block Drop U, and then he went on top of that and modified everything. So, and I think the idea he came up of with having to defeat the enemies along with the blocks was a very, very clever idea, and I think it worked very well in the game. And the entire purpose behind this collaboration was to gain awareness for his upcoming game Twisted Fusion, which is coming out early next year. So it was a successful Kickstarter project earlier this year, and we just kind of, you know, I was doing an interview with him for his Nintendo site, and we were kind of just joking around about having Twisted Fusion levels as an update to Block Drop U. And then what happened was we couldn't really just settle on 20. So we just decided to make it a spinoff title, and that way he can kind of gain a following for the art and the style of Twisted Fusion before his game comes out.
Yeah, and
that's cool. It's a good idea.
Yeah, it was a great idea. And you know, I really like it because it feels like, I mean, it does feel like a crossover, but it almost feels like a sequel in a way too, because I kind of felt that too. Yeah, it feels like everything's kind of like, I don't want to say more polished, because it has the same polish, but it has like that next evolution of Block Drop.
Yes, it adds an extra layer of complexity that makes it even more fun. So
Yeah, he definitely did a really good job on it. And, you know, I've been playing it for the last couple of days, and I still haven't beat the entire game.
It's challenging, for sure. I was like, wow, okay, I got that level. Awesome. All right, move on to the next one.
we're actually going to have a contest on Miiverse this weekend, and we're going to give away some eShop credit. And one of the goals is gonna, you know, you can gain an entry if you complete the regular levels and then or the Evan stages, and then there's the rooftop stages and the city stages. Not sure if you guys unlocked any of that yet.
Not yet.
Lewis is pretty sadistic in that first level. I'm like on level like 26, I think, of the Evan level, so I'm almost done.
Okay.
Yeah, it's taking some time.
Awesome stuff. Yeah, it's definitely challenging, and I think it, you know, for $2, it definitely adds a lot of, you know, you're going to be investing a good amount of time trying to beat and unlock everything. So
yeah, you get a lot of value to that for the price. Yep. So
I actually suggested to him, like, you know, can I sell this for $3 or $4, because this is a big game. But ultimately we decided on $2 because we do want as many people to try this out as possible. And yeah, you know, it's basically a marketing tool for Twisted Fusion is kind of what it is meant for. But it ended up being its own little thing, which is nice too.
I'm gonna contact you in a couple weeks. I'm just curious, and I just want to know if it actually helps you sell any more copies of Block Drop U. So I'm just curious if you see the sales go up. So I'll just shoot you a message, and I'm just curious if it helped you at all as well.
Yeah, that'll be interesting as well. I mean, Block Drop U's on sale right now, so that alone is kind of, you know, helping that do a little bit better. So, yeah, it will definitely be interesting to see how that goes, and it'll be interesting to see, like, once Twisted Fusion comes out, if he can perform better with that game versus what some other indies have performed at in the past for a similar price range.
Yeah, I'm excited about playing the Twisted Fusion. The only thing that worries me is that, like, the 2D side scrollers are very plentiful on the Wii U, so I hope that doesn't hurt him.
Yeah, he has some, from what I've seen, he has some pretty unique things going on with the Wii U, though, that might kind of set it apart. And the music is amazing, and the graphics are pretty sweet, too. So I don't think he'll have an issue standing out.
Yeah, and then, we're going to actually have him on the podcast next week to interview Lewis. So we'll talk about Twisted Fusion with him then fully. So
cool.
That'll be fun.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to
that. So, have you ever thought about doing a 3-pack for your tabletop series games?
Actually, that is in the works right now. So
awesome. We're psychic. That's awesome.
But not for North America. So in North America, they are sold singly. They're 99¢ a piece. Two of which are on sale for 69¢ right now. So in Europe, the issue with Europe and the reason why they haven't been published right now is because the cost to rate a game in Europe is around $1,000 for a small game like mine.
Wow.
If your game is over 450 megabytes, like most of the Unity based games are, then it could be several $1,000s to get it rated.
Wow.
So yeah, and unfortunately that's what's keeping a lot of games from the European eShop right now. And so the idea behind it, it's called Tabletop Gallery, and what it's going to be, it's going to be poker dice, it's going to be Shut the Box and Toss and Go all into one title. Cool. And that will be exclusive to Europe.
Okay, that's awesome. That title.
Yep.
I read on your Twitter before, someone asked something about Europe and you said you might discuss it later. Was that for that 3-pack?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Cool. Very cool. So
and then we also have Twisted Fusion right now. I'm waiting on the ratings from PEGI and USK to come back. Those are expected around the 29th, 30th of this month. And then I will be submitting that to Nintendo of Europe to get that published in Europe.
Okay, great. Yeah, I know we have some listeners from over across the pond, so that'll help them. So they'll know when their games are available over there. Is it Germany the one that's cost so much to get it rated over there?
Well, actually, Germany is only slightly higher than PEGI.
Okay. But PEGI covers a couple regions, doesn't it?
Yeah, so PEGI covers everything except for Germany. And Australia.
Oh, yeah, they're stricter over there.
But the thing about Europe is 90% of your sales will come from either the UK or Germany.
Hmm.
So having PEGI include all those extra countries, I mean, it adds up over time. But it's not like people are like, oh, I'll only release in PEGI. And you know what? That's what I've done with Block Drop U. And, you know, I got my USK rating for Block Drop U, but I've never have taken the time to resubmit that to Nintendo to get that published in Germany. I'm waiting for these extra levels to be finished. And then when those extra levels are included with that, it'll be released in Germany as well. Which should definitely help out sales. That's for sure. Cause Germany is a pretty big market for Nintendo, but yeah, it's a little pricey, but it was worth it so far for me for Block Drop U just being in PEGI. So being with USK should be even better.
Absolutely. Mm. So there was something you wanted, an exclusive little teaser you wanted to share tonight?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so based on the positive feedback we've been getting on Block Drop Cross Twisted Fusion. So originally I had partnered with
And I'm going to mess up this name. So let me... Nami Tentu, I believe is the name of the developer, is how you pronounce it. So he's the developer behind Ping 1.5 Plus, which is an eShop title. And so back before Blockdrop even came out, there was a website that mixed our games up, and they wrote me as the developer of Ping Plus. So we got to talking, and we were joking about it. We were like, oh, we should, you know, I should put, you know, levels with your game and my game, and then my game and your game. So that's what we actually talked about. And they were originally supposed to be released as the 20 extra levels in Blockdrop U. But I was having so much fun with them, and I think there's so much room for uniqueness with them that we are actually doing a standalone crossover title called Blockdrop Cross Ping Plus. And that will be released at some point in 2015. And it'll have another 50 levels for $1.99, built with web framework on the same engine with Blockdrop U. And we're going to try out some pretty cool, like, anti-gravity stuff. And it's just going to be a lot of fun.
That's exciting. I'm looking forward to it. And
me too.
I told the developer over there that I'd give him a shout-out. His game's going to be on sale on the 18th of this month for $1.99. That's Ping 1.5 Plus. It's actually a really fun game if you like, you know, old school, really challenging games. It's really fun.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, originally it's $4.99, and honestly, if you do not mind spending the extra couple dollars, buy it right now for $4.99, because it is worth every single penny. Plus, it'll help you kind of get a little bit closer to your next tier with the Digital Deluxe promotion. But yeah, $1.99, I mean, you really cannot beat that price. Of course, I bought it day one when it was $4.99. I had to. and there's a lot of there's a lot of cool Blockdrop U levels in there too, and they're very difficult. You know, the game, it's a very challenging game, but there's a lot of content, and yeah, it's definitely worth
yeah,
it.
Yeah, there's over 120 levels, I think, and I mean it is like balls tough to beat that game. So
and
it is
a lot of content.
Really tough.
Yeah, I remember I did on one of my Twitch feeds one time, I was showing off the Blockdrop U levels, and I could not beat it. Like, it was the first time I was playing it, because he had sent me an advanced copy before the game came out, and I could not beat it. So I looked really foolish playing this game. I'm like, I'm sorry, guys, I really don't, like, know how to play this game. This is really challenging for me.
But that's the kind of twitching people want to see, is like a good challenge, you know, and it's like it's a real one there, you know. They know that you haven't played it before.
Yeah, I was struggling. It was tough.
Yeah, that is one tough game, I'll tell you what. I got to about the ninth world, so I got pretty deep into it before I reviewed it, but it's so tough. I was like, I'm like, oh, I can't finish it. I'm gonna sit here and throw my controller through the screen.
Yeah. Yeah, that happened.
but it is so fun. But like, seriously, yeah, what Mike said, you know, if pick it up for $4.99 now, if you know, if you don't have that kind of money, and you definitely at $2, you can't miss that deal. So and that's probably, you know, the last time it'll be on sale for the year, so there's only a few weeks left. But if you could afford the $5, help out the developer, get it for $5, you know. If not, get it for $2. You shouldn't pass it up.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and if you do wait till Thursday, I mean, just look at it this way. You can purchase Ping Plus, you can purchase Blockdrop, Twisted Fusion, and Toss and Go, all for less than you spend on Mimi Run. So, I mean, look at that value. I mean,
it's true.
You can get three games for the price of one. I mean, just endless value right there.
Maybe we'll post this interview on YouTube.
Hey. I'm going to actually throw our logo in there, throw your logo in there, and that's say, awesome. Yep, interview, we'll put on YouTube, and we'll post it on the site too, and we'll have it on our podcast. So,
awesome stuff, guys.
But how do you choose your soundtracks in your games?
Blockdrop Twisted Fusion, of course, is the soundtrack for Twisted Fusion. So That was out of my hands on that one.
Yeah.
So Toss and Go was actually it's an original track that was created by a guy that I met on Twitter. So he does really great work, and he kind of just wanted some exposure, so he created it for me for free, and I really like it. So I'll definitely be working with him in the future on some paid work on future titles.
Was that Matt?
Yeah.
Okay. I've talked with him before. Yeah, he's a really cool guy. I do want to get him on the podcast and interview him at some point too, because he had a couple of tracks I was listening to from, I know from your game, and then he had another game. I forget what game it was, but I was really enjoying his tracks. So I'd like to get him on and interview him about making the soundtracks for games, because that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like it when people too, they release the soundtracks for games, especially when you play them a lot and you're like digging them. You're like, yeah, I'd listen to that. I'd buy that soundtrack.
Yeah, I forget the name of the game. Tiny Galaxy. Is it Tiny Galaxy?
Yep, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, that's Taylor. Yeah, so he's doing.
Yep.
So he's doing the soundtrack for that.
That was the game I was thinking of, where I heard a couple of the soundtrack, the songs on there, and I was like, wow, this is some good music.
Yeah, that's actually, so I was listening to it. I'm like, hey, do you want to do a track for this? Because so in my previous games, what I've done is, so I'll just go on to like SoundHound or something like that. And, I'll find a loop that I really like. And, most of those artists on there will let you use their tracks for free as long as you mention them in your project. So it's a win-win for both of us. So it gets their track exposure. It saves me from having to spend the money on a track. So especially when you're, when I was a brand new developer, I had like a $0 budget on all these games. So, now, like, especially with Super RoboMouse, that's an original score too. So, you can spend a little bit more money on stuff now that I have revenue coming in. So, I probably won't be going to SoundHound anymore to get tracks, but when you're a brand new developer, it's kind of what you got to do just to kind of get by until you have a steady stream of income coming in.
Very cool. Yeah, I've liked all the soundtracks on your game so far, so that's why that was one of my questions I was curious about, because as a fan listening to the soundtracks of your games, I was really curious about those.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's funny because most reviews that I read, they'll say the same thing. They'll kind of repeat the same thing on the reviews of every one of my games. So they'll complain about the soundtrack, and then there's one particular reviewer. His name's Eric. He's a really cool guy. So I'm not like making fun of him or anything like that. But he'll always rip on me for making a plain E manual. he's always like, dude, you got to put more effort into it. And I'm like, well, I'd like to. I think it's really cool what Nintendo does with their manuals. But the fact of the matter is, less than 1% of people are going to look at that. So I'm not going to.
I only recently found out about those, to be honest with you.
Oh, really? See,
yeah.
And that's my point exactly. Like, I'm not going to put all of this effort into something that nobody is going to pay attention to.
So. Yeah, I'm definitely part of the 99% in there. I just don't go to them unless I can't figure the game out and I have no clue what I'm doing. I won't open up.
But I understand the want, like, people like that stuff. I mean, I'm an artist, so like being one, I love great detail and stuff that looks pretty and nice to look at. So it's like, I understand that, but you can only do so much, when you have tight timelines that you're running with, and budgets.
Yeah, and then the thing is, like, so the more you try to do extravagant things with it is the more chances that it will fail certification. Like, so Nintendo does have, just like with games, with what you can do in your game, they have a set of rules of what you can and cannot do with the manuals and how it has to be set up. Okay. So, if I go all out with something and I make a little mistake, it's going to delay the game because it might fail for that. So nice. I'd rather just make a plain template. And I anything that's important, I got my email address on there, my name on there. That's really, you know, if you have any questions about it, you can always just like send me a quick email and I'll respond right away. So, and the games are nothing where it's ever overly complicated anyways. So, I don't really think that you need to kind of explain how things work. Cause I mean, most of the games have like a help,
you're really good about that.
All the dice games, they have a help button. So, I mean, it explains to you how it works, but yeah.
Yeah. I always look at just really, I mean, that's just kind of like icing on the cake. That's like it complaining about the box art of a game that gets released on disc.
You put extra goodies in the manual. So if people don't see it, they don't get them. But if you see it, you get rewarded. Like do that later on.
Achievement unlocked for looking at the virtual,
like
guide.
Little Easter eggs, like little Easter eggs. Oh man!
There you go. Yeah, as soon as you can figure out how to do the stamp integration, make it so that they earn a stamp by opening the virtual guide.
There you go.
I don't even know if that's possible.
I know we're thinking way outside the box. I'm sorry.
I mean that would be awesome, but like since the manuals are integrated with the OS the console, yeah, I don't even know if you could do that. that would be awesome though.
I'm trying to find ways that people will open up those guides. So
I know, me too. Yeah, I was just like,
or like giving a stamp if you follow us on Twitter or something like that. But I don't even think they would let you do that.
Yeah. I still wish Nintendo would release like an official Miiverse app for the phone. I know you can use it in the browser, but I wouldn't mind having an app.
Yeah, that would be pretty neat. I always thought about that as well.
Yeah, they kind of made those announcements. What was it, about a year ago or so, that they were going to start using smartphones more? And I really haven't even seen that. So.
Well, I think when they said that, they kind of meant them personally. They're going to use phones that are smart. Because it kind of looks like they're not actually using them in their game. So
yeah.
Maybe it just meant like Miyamoto got an iPhone is what that meant. So I don't know.
Possibility.
Well, whatever they're doing, they're making hell of a games like for the last year, man. They've been on such a good run.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think it would help too if they didn't have two platforms to support.
Oh, absolutely. I've said that too. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I mean, if the next system is actually a hybrid console, I think that would be awesome because we would really just get so many more games.
See, I was hoping it would be something like the PlayStation TV. That would
definitely. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Where you can play it in, you know, if you get multiple, you can play it in any room in the house. You just use your Wii Pad. Like, give me the same Wii Pad. I'm okay with that. And just connect.
I really like the Wii U gamepad. I mean, it's. It would be cool if they redesigned it to kind of be a little bit more slimmer and sleek. Yeah. But because sometimes it just seems like, you know, especially if you're playing for a long time, that it just kind of like it just weighs down. Like, I don't know. Yeah. It gains weight as you're holding it. It's the weirdest
thing. I completely agree. I noticed that the other day and I'm like, I just like laid on the couch, laid it on the couch. It was like ultra lazy gaming. I'm like, I don't feel like holding this anymore.
I'll tell you what, though, it definitely forms around your hands very well, though.
It does.
It feels so comfortable. It's one of the most comfortable controllers I've ever held. So,
yeah, it's weird. So I actually had the opportunity to try out one of the original game pads that was showcased at E3 2011, mm-hmm. the ones with the circle pads. And
cool.
That one actually felt better to me.
With the circle pads or just the form of it?
Just the form of it. Like, it just seemed like it was a little bit small. Like, it wasn't as wide.
Gotcha.
Oh, okay.
So, it was the weirdest thing. It just felt better in my hand. It just felt like a more, like, a solid device.
Yeah, I don't like the slide pads on the 3DS. Like, I'm so happy they didn't go with that design because to me, the analog sticks feel so much more comfortable.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one.
I kind of wish, though, that they would. So my biggest complaint about the analog sticks this generation and last generation were that they were not the GameCube analog sticks. I love the GameCube controller, and I just don't – I don't know. I would prefer if they would patch every game to add GameCube controller support because I love that controller.
You like the C-nub better than the actual –
Yeah.
Stick?
Well, I just like, I don't know. I just like the, I like how the, I don't even know how to explain it. Like, it's, I don't know. It just, it feels,
it was a
so
comfortable controller. I know what you mean. It just felt
absolutely
right.
Yeah,
like, it's just,
I like the button layout of, I know you might call me crazy, but I like the kidney bean buttons. Like, I actually really enjoyed the layout where the A button was huge in the middle and then they had, like, the circular buttons around it.
Yep.
But I'd say the L and R, though, are way better on the Wii U gamepad. I like the trigger feel on those ones better. I don't like the pressure-sensitive ones.
Yeah, I wasn't, I don't know, it just doesn't seem like there's as much of a grip on these.
Yeah, I can see that too, to hold your finger on there.
Yeah.
But so we have a little extra time. Are you good, Mike? Can we ask you a couple more questions?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So what we were talking about is you know, there's a bunch of haters out there that and you know, we were talking with you earlier, I think off the record,
yes,
about you know, about the Nintendo Life and you know, the comments on there. Yeah, I'm not saying anything bad about their site. I like their site. It's a good site. But so like, do you notice with the more popularity you're getting and the more games you're releasing, you're getting more like Twitter trolls and other trolls?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so the thing about Twitter that's fantastic about Twitter is that if somebody is being an asshole, you can block them, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. So
They don't realize how close they can get to you. Like they're going directly to you. I don't know if people realize that.
Yeah, and I don't think and even people that don't like tag me on their posts, they don't realize that I search for my games. Like, so I have you know, I use TweetDeck and I have it set up that it'll automatically show me anytime someone mentions Block Drop or Poker Dice or Spiky Walls and so I see everything. And I've even seen a few comments from, like, people that are reviewing my games that have made, like, snarky comments like, oh, my God, I can't believe I have to review this piece of shit, Spiky Walls, blah, blah, blah. Like, did you not think I wasn't going to see that?
Yeah, that's so ridiculous.
Yeah, so it's really – but, you know, thankfully, you know, with Twitter, you can block them. So, you know – but some of the comments, like, for instance, one that I'll kind of just put out there that I seen today was, oh, I stopped reading this article once I seen it was RC Madiacs. I knew it would be crap. I only clicked on it to comment. Like, really?
Really? That's, that's troll right there.
And, yeah. It just continues from there. So
well, they're the ones that are going to be missing out on great games like
I hope
you, Block Drop
you
and the
I hope
the
you keep
Block
track
Drop
of them so that like when they email you for the games, you're like, didn't you like talk crap about me? So no.
I keep track of stuff. So they're
So you hear that, Twitter trolls?
I keep track of them, and then you know I, but you know for every you know the ratio seems to be for every like 10 people that will rip on you, there's at least one that will go, you know, above and beyond to kind of defend you, which is awesome. So that kind of makes up for it. So
people in that sphere, we like stick up for each other and stuff like that. So if we see someone ripping on someone unnecessarily, they get horribly flamed out and blocked. So
right, like and it's the weirdest thing too. Like, and I think the reason why I bring up Nintendo Life so much is because they're the most trafficked Nintendo site out there, so they you know, of course they're going to get the most comments on their sites, but it's the weirdest thing. So like, you know, they'll be doing, maybe Nintendo Life will be doing a review for another indie game and a lot of people will call it shovelware or they'll call it crap, and then somehow my name gets pulled into it. They'll be like, oh, I thought RC Madiacs made this piece of crap or something like that. Or they'll be like, yeah. And it, like, for instance, I guess there was a game that just released in Europe called Tested with Robots. And it got a 2 out of 10. And somebody, like, had nothing to do with me. And they just brought out my name about how did this get a 2 out of 10 if Spiky Walls got a 4 out of 10 or something like that. And yeah,
it's probably because Spiky Walls is probably a better game. That's why.
Well,
duh.
I mean, don't get me wrong. So, test like the thing with Tested with Robots, it looks like a pretty cool game. It's just it's priced really hot. It's priced at €10.
Oh,
which
wow.
is yeah, a which is crazy expensive. So yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Interesting.
Besides the fans or, you know, I guess haters, do you also have other developers that troll on you?
or that are at least positive, you know, and like help you out and stuff.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, so there's, you know, we got Chris from Nami Tenu.
I got it.
Chris has been great, and then Eli from Treefall Studios, you know, has been awesome. I've been talking to him back and forth, and you know, both of them are really going to come in handy when I do kind of go full force into Unity development, because they have more experience. So I'll definitely be able to kind of lean on them for advice and tips and tricks. And then there's Edward, and I'm going to mess up his last name, so I'm not going to.
DiGeronimo?
I think that's it.
Yeah.
He's from
Saturnine.
Mm-hmm. He's the developer behind Turtle Tales. So,
yep. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I talk with him like literally every single day because he has.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
He's
really
awesome,
nice.
And he has a ton of like game industry experience. So he's been developing with Nintendo since the DS. So
oh,
wow. He has a lot of experience with Nintendo. So you know, me and him, we always talk about stuff and just share tips and tricks and stuff like that. So he's awesome too. And then of course Greg from Zen. I'm gonna mess this up too. Zenfa Productions. He makes Zaikasa's Last Stand, the tower defense game.
Oh yeah, the one that you teased me with the other day. What a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny. I was testing out his, which I just found out today he failed.
Oh, that sucks.
Unfortunately, he failed testing because of his Miiverse, which Miiverse, I guess, it's just anything with internet connectivity, it's hard to get past.
I can imagine.
But, yeah. Well, and that's the thing, too. Like, people don't realize, I mean, Nintendo, you know, they're always calling quality control into the conversation, but they really do test your game thoroughly. But yeah, I was teasing everybody because he sent me an early build of his game, and I got to like post on Miiverse using his game and stuff, so it was pretty cool. We should actually talk about would be cool to talk about Nintendo's seal of quality and what it actually is, because I think a lot of people are misinformed about what the seal of quality was.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people think it has to do with the quality of the game when it doesn't. It just ensures that the game works. That's all.
Yeah, people think it has to do with the number scale, and it has nothing to do with the number scale.
No, not at all.
And it's just basically so you don't end up with Assassin's Creed Unity.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's why it's not on the Wii U. So
that's probably exactly why. Probably couldn't pass the lot check.
but then you got stuff like Sonic Boom, which I haven't played personally, but from what I understand is extremely buggy.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Yeah.
And I think that's more of a case of trying to squeeze a title before the holidays than it is anything
else.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think Nintendo put themselves in that position by only releasing Captain Toad and Smash Brothers in that last 2 months, because Bayonetta is, while it's my game of the year, I still think that it doesn't hit the Nintendo audience.
Yeah, you know what? It definitely. So I have been a Nintendo gamer since day one. Mm-hmm. I purchased Bayonetta 2. I did not enjoy it.
Really?
That's just not like I really, really gave it a try. I played. At least an hour or two of each game, and I just could not get hooked into it.
Oh man, I love.
Yeah.
Do you like God of War?
No, I am not like so. As far as like other consoles go, too, like so, I have a PS Vita, and I have an Xbox One,
mm-hmm.
but my type of game is the Nintendo game.
Yeah. I'm the same way. I've been Nintendo all the way. I would say about 90% of my reviews I do are for Nintendo consoles. I just prefer to play the Nintendo games, and I've always been a Nintendo gamer. The first time I cheated on Nintendo was the PS2. So.
Well, see, yeah, for same, me, it was the PS3 because I needed a Blu-ray player. So
I cheated earlier.
Yeah, no, I did too. Yeah.
And then you know what's funny? I went back at that point. When I cheated on Nintendo, I went to the PS2. I wanted to play Kingdom Hearts, and I wanted to play Grand Theft Auto. So at that point, I picked one up. It was my DVD player. And then I went backwards. I picked up a Genesis, a Dreamcast. I went back and picked up a lot of the stuff. I was working in the at a game shop at the time, so I wanted to experience some of the other non-Nintendo stuff since I had branched out at that point. And you know what I found out was that I was better off just sticking with Nintendo.
Yeah.
They really make fun games. So, Captain Toad has been an amazing game. So
I'm having so much fun with that. I just made a video for that I'm going to publish, and I'm just like, I love it. I'm playing a lot. So
I am so hooked on that game. So that's my game of the year for this year would definitely be Captain Toad over Smash Brothers. And a lot of people are like, oh my God, no. But yeah, I mean, I like Smash Brothers. It's fun, but yeah, I'm all about Captain Toad. Captain Toad's awesome.
There you go. That should make you want to go buy that game more.
It's under the Christmas tree, man. I can't play it for 9 months.
I know. He's teased because he's got the game. He just can't open it. So. The wife
won't let him. That's why I download everything. You play it right away.
Exactly.
There you go.
But yeah, I kind of have this. I have mixed emotions about Smash because I do love it. It's the best version of Smash. The only thing is I don't feel like there's enough. Like if I don't have at least three friends here, I don't feel like there's enough to keep me back playing that game.
What, Captain Toad?
No, Smash Brothers.
Smash Brothers. Yeah. You know, it's funny. So Smash Brothers, I've been using it mostly just to train my amiibo.
Yeah, me too.
So
yeah.
I'll set them on like. You know, you could probably tell by Twitter that I'm obsessed with amiibo. I have the 15 that are technically available right now. I'm still waiting on these last three to come out.
So you got the rare ones?
Oh yeah, yep. Dude, I was out at 7 a.m. waiting for Target to open the day they came out. Like,
oh my God.
I made sure that I got them on day one so that I didn't have that problem that everybody else had. So. I love amiibo, but yeah, I'll put like an 8-player match on and I'll let them level up to 50. And that's like my ritual when I get new amiibos, I'll come home and just let them fight themselves. And let them level up, so.
Hey, they unlock trophies and stuff for you too that way. So
yeah. So most of my trophies have actually gotten from doing amiibo or I do like doing the spectator, mode. Mm-hmm. And betting on other matches. But yeah, I haven't really gone too deep into it. I probably will if I ever find the time to do it, which I probably won't. But
can I ask you a quick question? Since you're like collecting all the amiibos, are you opening all of them and using them all, or are you saving some like that are rare, or like how are you going about by that? Because I know that being a Nintendo person, a lot of people are like divided. They're buying like two, one to save and one to play with.
Well, see, so. Okay, so they are collectible, and I get that because like when I was a little kid, I used to collect Hot Wheels and leave them in the package and stuff like that. But to me, their purpose is to be played with. So
I
rip them all open. I have started picking up some extras to kind of help some people out that I chat with a lot on Twitter. Because if they can't find them, I'll be like, you know, just pay me for the amiibo plus a couple dollars for shipping and I'll mail it to you. So
that's
I've
nice.
Actually, yeah, I actually have gotten some, yeah, I picked up an extra villager. So I just sent some guy a villager, the other day for cost. And cause I know they're like $50 on eBay.
Yeah. I've been actually looking for the Wii Fit one and the villager myself. And I'm just like, they're like $50 or $60 on eBay right now. I'm like, that's ridiculous. Crazy. It's crazy. Yeah.
But I did. It's funny. So I pre-ordered 4 Shulks. I pre-ordered 4 Meta Knights. and I am waiting for Target to open up pre-orders on Rosalina.
And then you got Lucario from Toys R Us?
Yeah, I got one of those. I didn't get a whole bunch of Toys R Us. It just seems like when they get them in, they get like 50 million of them. So gotcha. I don't think that's going to be that hard to get. I know the GameStop one will be because they'll stop making them and then they'll open them up and they'll sell them as used for like $80 because they're assholes like that.
Like yeah. They did with Snowblade.
Well, which one was the new amiibo that is going to be rare from GameStop only?
They were saying
Shulk.
Shulk is? Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they were saying in the new ones that just released, they said Little Mac and Zelda might be Diddy Kong and Zelda, I think, were going to be the tough ones to find.
Yeah, I'll tell you what.
They have like a million of them at my Target right now, so.
Oh, you should probably go pick up some Diddy Kongs then, because everywhere I've been, so it's only Zelda. Zelda's everywhere.
Okay.
But
I can't find Zelda. That's interesting. So we should trade. We should I'll buy some. We'll trade for sure.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, that's exactly why like I buy so many amiibo, because I just have them sitting around. And if it ever comes down to like, let's say they have like a special Nintendo World Store exclusive amiibo, I'm not going to drive to New York to get an amiibo. No. But if somebody's close by and they need something, I'll be able to trade with them. So
yeah.
That's why I get so many damn amiibo.
good idea. Well, we got to ask all of our questions and plus some.
Yeah, definitely. So that was fun. I would definitely ask if we can have you back on for Super Robo Mouse when you're about to release that. Would that be cool?
Absolutely, man. Yeah, sure.
Okay, cool. I'll look forward to that then. Awesome. Do you have any questions heading out?
Well, Ant, I lost you again. Both of you.
If we can get all 8 million Wii U owners to buy these, then I can retire and never work.
Yeah. Well, we wanted you to keep making games for us, though. So
Well, hey, if I can sell 8 million copies, then I can literally spend 2 or 3 years on one game and really make it like a $100 AAA content game.
You gonna make a Minecraft clone for us?
No, we'll leave that to the jokesters over at Nexus Games.
Okay.
just remember that when UCraft does come out, that they don't want your money.
They want
your hearts, right?
And your soul.
So, yeah, no, I want your money. I want your money because I can't pay bills with hearts. So, yeah. But they don't want their money. They want hearts. So.
Well, okay, later on, they figure the heart will get them $1 billion later, but I don't think so. So.
But we enjoyed talking with you, Mike. It was
fun. It was
time.
Great. It's a pleasure. Thank you again for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It was a lot of fun. Yeah, I'll definitely do it again.
Yeah, keep releasing more games so we can get you on here.
Yeah.
Hey, I have at least, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 games. 4, not counting catching up Europe with a couple games.
Gotcha.
Already. Yeah, so, and there's at least 1 or 2 that are, like, already starting to get planned for 2016, so.
What do you think your next game is coming out in early next year?
Well, early next year, first will be Block Drop Twisted Fusion in Europe.
Okay.
And then shortly after that, Super Robo Mouse should be ready.
Okay, so then we're on schedule to have you on for Super Robo Mouse.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Perfect.
Yeah. Then after that, I will slowly release got some other games, Color Bombs and Pentapuzzle, and then Block Drop Ping Plus will probably be a summer title if I had to guess.
Awesome.
Somewhere around that. Yeah.
Are you going to any game shows this year coming up?
It's funny. So I bought tickets to PAX South and PAX East.
PAX South, like that's a new one?
San Antonio.
Yeah, it's a new one. So I bought tickets for both And I just bought them just because, like, I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to go, but I needed to get the tickets just in case. And I decided ultimately not to go to either one of those due to just general, like, financial reasons. I wanted to narrow it down to maybe one or two shows next year. So I definitely want to go to E3.
We'll be at E3. I'll see you there. I'm going to PAX East as well. Yeah,
I definitely want to go to E3. So that's, like, on the top of my list. And if I had to, like, if my time and my money allows me to, I'd like to go to the GDC 2015 in March. So we'll see.
Nice. It's a lot all at once.
And the only reason I'd rather go to those two is because they're, like, industry focused.
Absolutely.
So because I'm, like, you know, the way I looked at it, so going to PAX would be just me going and playing games, which is not really going to help me business wise. Yeah, whereas going to E3, you know, I'll definitely get to meet everybody at Nintendo, which I haven't gotten to meet face to face yet. And then going to GDC, you know, there's going to be a ton of resources, especially since I'm trying to get into Unity development. So there's just going to be a ton of resources there to go to. So I think I've narrowed it down to those two if I can afford to go to both of those. It's kind of hard being on the East Coast, you know, and they have all of these different things on the West Coast. I wish they would bring a couple of them over this way.
I know, so, for sure. Yeah.
it's just really, like, if I lived over there, I would go to all of them because I wouldn't have to fly or...
Yeah, I lived in Seattle. It was really nice. I could just literally walk down the street because my apartment was down the road from where they host PAX Prime. So, and then I moved back to Detroit, and I'm like, oh.
What were you thinking?
I don't know.
Once I get out, they come and drag me back in.
I know, right? So.
All right. Cool all right, stuff, thanks. Guys.
Yeah, we'll talk later then.
Nice talking to you, Mike.
All right.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right.